This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 226 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
So, how are you doing? We did not actually spend Thanksgiving together.
It was a good Thanksgiving. I didn't have to eat turkey, which means it was an amazing Thanksgiving.
So our Thanksgiving, I went with our parents to see some family out of town, and it was pretty traditional. But the funny thing was there were no kids, like no grandkids, other than the ones that are around our age or a little bit younger. Mm-hmm. But there were no little kids. Before we get to the episode, we have a little bit of listener feedback for episode 310, Heaven and Earth. First up is Keisha.
Hi, Ginger and Summer. This is Keisha calling from Odenton, Maryland. I really like the storyline. There are a couple of things I didn't like. I didn't like them changing the fact that Jamie never used his real name on the ship. I'm not happy with that, and I don't like the way they changed the persona of Jamie. Jamie would never have spoken to Fergus the way he did. He loved Fergus, and he loved Fergus just as much as he loved Claire, and he wouldn't want anything to happen to him or Claire or Marsali. So that was a lot out of character for the writers. But other than that, I mean, Mr. Pound. I loved Mr. Pound. It was so sad to see him go. But I am digging adaptation, and I am a book reader. I've read all 8 books. So I like adaptation, and I'm just going to ride with it and see where this takes us. Thanks so much. Have a nice day.
Martina P. writes, at first glimpse, I absolutely loved this episode because of its extremely high entertainment value. There was, in all honesty, never a dull moment. However, digging a little deeper and rewatching multiple times with a more critical eye, I dare to proclaim that Jamie's intelligence and moral compass is completely off. Jamie is definitely not a fool or uncaring of the people in his life. In my mind, his statements and actions greatly violate these facts. Starting a mutiny? Seriously? The way he talks and acts towards Fergus is unfaithful to his character and very unethical behavior. He does redeem himself toward the end when he thanks Fergus and calls him mon fils, which I adored beyond comparison. When Claire gets caught by Captain Leonard during her attempt to escape, she requests him to look the other way. This doesn't sound like Claire at all. The Claire I know would have argued Jamie's innocence for murder and would have insisted that he owes her more than one life. These episode flaws do not make the show less entertaining, but just break character a little for Claire, but mostly for Jamie, whom we know as a smart strategist who always has a plan and cares with all his heart about his people. The actors still perform brilliantly with the lines they were given. I hope we return to smart Jamie in the next episode. On a different note, Claire's look on the boat is super stunning, totally in love with her look as well as her performance. Jamie still manages to look sexy even when retching his heart out with his bare chest. I don't even have to mention the scene with Elias. It's everyone's favorite, and he had all of us in tears. The score is so beautiful, I can't even find the right words. Greatly missed our friend, who didn't make an appearance for some reason. Oh well, I'm along for the ride and excited for the next episode. Thank you for all you do, my favorite podcast, and thanks for letting me participate, even with limited English skills. With love, Martina. Martina, you are always, always welcome, and your English skills are great. Next up is Michael M.
Howdy, Ginger. Howdy, Summer. This is Michael from Shawnee, Kansas, with my review of Outlander, episode 310. I enjoyed it. That's it. I don't have any other unique perspective to share on that. So let's go on to my review of Outlander Pod, episode 225. One of the many things I enjoy about the podcast is when Ginger has a strong conviction to express an opinion. I can sometimes visualize your thought process. It's like I can see you thinking. I don't always agree with your conclusion, but the road towards its end is well worth the journey. For example, Jamie's character. I agree that the Jamie we saw on board the Artemis while Claire was away was a bit of a miss for book Jamie. You mentioned that Jamie's character had moments of off-the-markness. for the past three episodes, I will counter with my own observation. The character of Jamie in 310 has been consistent with the character of Show Jamie. Now let's talk about our friend. I don't understand, Ginger, why you're expecting to see our friend when Claire was talking about compartmentalization with Elias, because she does not meet our friend until after Elias dies. This is in chapter 48, titled Moment of Grace. I think the director did a good job of teasing us book readers later on after Elias' burial at sea as Captain Leonard approaches Claire. At first, Leonard was out of focus and then framed from behind. Only when he starts speaking, we finally see that this was not our friend. And Summer, O ye of little faith, I was disappointed in your statement that we won't see our friend again this season. By now, I expect you will have seen the photographic evidence I posted in the group that we do indeed see our friend.
Eileen P. writes, I am still crying over Elias Pound. I know he heeded Claire's warnings regarding how to prevent catching typhoid. I can only conclude that he should never have given Claire his lucky rabbit's foot. Do you think I'm being too superstitious? Come on, this is a show with time travel. Of course it was the loss of the rabbit's foot that did poor Elias in. Beyond tear prick. Elias Pound really stole the show on the porpoise. That said, the goat lady, Annika, was wonderful too. I think we have a new phrase to acknowledge you will solve a problem. When your boss asks if you'll meet the deadline, answer, my goat eats grass. I really loved that the writers went beyond the book and filled us in on what was happening on the Artemis while Claire was on the porpoise. I know there were aspects of Jamie's actions that Ginger felt were out of character. I'm on the fence. Jamie displayed the Fraser temper, which goes beyond the rational. At the same time, we saw Jamie, the chess master, calculating his moves. This Jamie reminded me of the time in season one when the Watch came to dinner at Lallybroch. All of a sudden, we saw this shrewd Jamie. I recall in later books, Claire pointing out that Jamie could be a dangerous man, creating an elaborate web using his skills from chess. When I see Jamie in the hold of the Artemis, I see the desperation to save Claire, never to be parted from her again. I see the Fraser temper that goes beyond reason, irrationally believing he could take over the ship. Jamie, the chess master, figuring out his options. His only way out is if Fergus steals the keys and frees him. He used that leverage that he had over Fergus when the years of devotion and loyalty didn't work. Am I happy that Jamie put Fergus in such a gut-wrenching position? Absolutely not, but for a man who is just looking at the moves that are available and can see nothing else but his goal, that was the only move left. With that, we got to see Fergus and Marsali discuss the dilemma, showing that they are mature adults in a loving relationship. In the end, Fergus refuses to do Jamie's bidding because he loves Jamie and Marsali and will move heaven and earth to protect them beyond all else. Next up, Sandy.
Hi ladies, this is Sandy from Oregon. I thought it was a great episode. Claire was doctoring her ass off, and then the meanwhile, she was making genuine new friends with Elias, and I thought that was a great relationship, even though it ended very sadly. I also thought that Jamie, not as a book reader, made the choice that I would have expected him to. They're now suddenly in the same time period, and she was taken away from him, and he actually can do something to help her, or at least he thinks he can, and so he would do anything. I didn't fault him for trying to get Fergus to help him, although I do believe that Fergus made the right choice, and I believe that Marsali was very strong in that choice as well, so I thought that was really great. But I don't fault him. I feel like he felt desperate that since they were in the same time that he should be able to help her, and he was going to do everything he could to keep her. I do hope that the sudden distance between Claire and Jamie will rattle Claire's brain and make her realize that her uncertainty about coming back really doesn't need to be there, that they really do belong together and that they can just move forward and be together and not be worried about Claire not wanting to be there anymore and Jamie being worried that she doesn't want to be there anymore. They just need to be together because that's how they are the best. That's my two cents. Thanks, ladies. Have a good day. Bye.
Linda G. writes, I did enjoy this episode. I have really become a fan of Marsali. I'm not quite sure if she's supposed to be 15 in the series versus the book. At any rate, well done. And that Fergus, OMG. How many hearts has he stolen? Definitely mine. And of course, how can we not fall in love with Elias? By the way, that's my son's name. I love the interaction with him and Claire, and definitely teared my eyes up when we had to say goodbye to him. My favorite was Annika. She was so charming. Absolutely loved her. Great casting on her as well. It was nice finally to see Jamie looking at the pictures of Brianna. I know there's some people who are not happy with the way they're portraying Jamie in this episode. Let's cut him some slack, please. The highlight of this episode for me was Claire jumping off that ship. That is one badass bold woman. Next, we hear from Sarah.
Hello, guys. This is Sarah from Chile, South America. I just wanted to say that I liked this episode so much more than the previous ones. That Mr. Pound was perfect. He was just as I imagined him to be when I was reading the book. His death really made me very sad, and I cried a lot. And I watched Outlander with my best friend. Both of us think that this episode was a great improvement, and that it went back to the good quality or the good feeling that we had with the beginning of the season. So I'm looking forward to the next one. Sadly, there are only three left, and I wanted to thank you for making this Outlander watching and reading experience so much richer and wonderful. Your podcast and the Facebook group have been a great companion. So thank you. Thank you very, very much.
And finally, Chelsea.
Hi, Ginger and Summer. This is Chelsea J from Orlando, Florida. Well, I wish we had seen more of Jamie in this episode. The person we saw was not the Jamie Fraser that I recognize. I'm with Ginger on this one. There was one moment when the captain said, "I have more to think about than just your wife," and Jamie pins him against the wall and goes, "My wife! My wife!" The rage and terror and desperation and helplessness are pouring out of him in that moment, and it's heartbreaking. But then, Jamie disappears and is replaced by this crazy, reckless man. Book Jamie might not always make the best decisions, but he always tries to. And even when he doesn't know what to do, he's never reckless. I could see him getting in a fight with the captain, and I can see the captain confining him into the brig temporarily, but it seemed crazy that he would do that for the entire voyage. But then I think Jamie would have tried to work with the captain to get to Claire, not work against him and try to mutiny a ship, kill or confine most of the crew, and attempt to captain a ship that he really has no idea how to sail with only 7 people. However, Jamie really has a lot going on at the moment. Let's look at what happened to him since Claire came back. He lost both of his businesses and sources of income. He had to get rid of a body. He's in hot water with his family. He got shot. He lost young Ian. He has to deal with Fergus and Marcelly's elopement, which ties into Leary in a way that he probably wouldn't want to be, and prevents him from being intimate with Claire during the voyage. He's had more than one serious argument with Claire, and now Claire has been kidnapped by the English on a plague ship. He doesn't even know that he's going to be arrested and hanged when he does find her. The poor guy is so out of control. Maybe I should give him a break. Plus, the show adds this dimension of uncertainty to their relationship that isn't really present in the books. All of this has happened, and we've only seen Claire and Jamie alone together a handful of times. He's probably scared not only that he wasn't able to protect her, but he's powerless to get her back. He doesn't know what might happen to her in the meantime, and she might decide that this was all a big mistake and leave him as soon as she gets the chance. He hasn't even gotten her completely back yet, and he's lost her again. But Book Jamie would have handled it better.
And now on to our discussion of episode 311 entitled Uncharted.
Uncharted was written by Karen Campbell and Shannon Goss and directed by Charlotte Brenstrom. The last episode left us with Claire jumping overboard. I still can't get over this new intro, Summer. This is the third time. Oh my gosh. I can't get over it. I love this music so much. I think it's my favorite intro.
And speaking of favorites, I honestly think that this is my favorite episode maybe of the season so far. And it's one of my favorite episodes of the season, and they adapted the hell out of it. Like, they cut a bunch of stuff out, and changed a bunch of things, but it worked so seamlessly for me that I pretty much loved all of it.
I'm glad that they changed the episode title from Turtle Soup to Uncharted. There's nothing wrong with the title Uncharted. I think it's actually because it's very sea, you know, sea related. Mm-hmm. It's
all that, and she's lost and she's in uncharted territory.
It's very evocative of the sea. But the reason I'm happy is because rightly or wrongly, I can't say wrongly because there's nothing wrong about it, but for good or for ill, one of the most iconic scenes, one of the two most, especially in this book, maybe of the whole series, are the print shop and Turtle Soup. I'm not equating them, but I'm saying they're two iconic scenes. And even the changes they made to the print shop did not deter from the print shop. So we got our print shop. It was pretty freaking sweet. And Summer saw me. Yes, like I was still bawling on the rewatches. She was there. But the Turtle Soup, which we'll get to, if you do what you did to that scene, I'm not complaining. It was different. But if you do what you did to an iconic scene and then still name an entire episode after that scene that you completely changed, I don't think, number one, the title would be meaningless to non-book readers. So that's not helping you out necessarily. They're going to say, what? Number two, if you change something that's iconic, don't draw extra attention to it. Plus, it made up the last, what, less than 5 minutes of the episode? So I just think it was good that they changed the title.
Well, yes, I agree with that statement. But we also have to understand that had they kept all of the things that had to happen to lead up to that scene being 100% accurate, that would have been the whole, that's at least an episode or two all by itself.
I agree. And I'm not talking about the lead up. You could have had everything changed the way you did up until that scene. But we lost our Murphy. You totally lost the simpatico nature of that whole relationship and thus that scene. So that now is not a miss because they changed it. So no. And then, of course, the whole thing with her hurting her arm and getting the stitches, all that stuff. That change, it was a quick and easy way to explain how something happened. And then still, it was because they could have so easily, if this were not an iconic from the book, an iconic scene. And if people weren't really looking forward to it, I would have totally left it out because it's not important. And I'm saying that as a huge book fan. It's not important. And if you keep it, again, trying to do well by it, whatever that is. And as Summer said, if you try and keep all the stuff that led up to it, oh my gosh, that's crazy town. It's more dangerous. It's more stunt work. It's more because in the book, in case you have no clue what we're talking about, in the book, they're reunited just similarly to the way they were in this show. And then once they're back on the Artemis, they come across, wasn't it the Bruja? It was pirates. And the one who sliced her was Portuguese. They are boarded by, they're attacked by pirates. Now they're able to survive, but well, she was actually hiding with Marsali in the where the liquor was, I guess, under below deck. She was hiding, and one of the pirates came below, and she couldn't understand him. And he, I don't know if he understood her, but he probably wanted to rape her, but you know, was trying to slash. They were trying to kill them all, and so she runs away, and he follows her, and he chases her up. She hurts him. She hurt, like, cuts a toe off of him or something. She, like, hurts him in some way. She climbs up the same thing that the guy did a few weeks ago who was trying to, like...
climbs the rigging and...
Yeah. She climbs the rigging to try to get away from it. And this guy is climbing after her. And she's so scared out of her mind that she's not...
Her adrenaline is...
Exactly. And he, like, is... She, like, basically holds on for dear life and pretty much closes her eyes. And he's slashing at her with literally a cutlass. I mean, you don't forget that word. He's slashing at her with a cutlass that is... probably never been cleaned, and has hit or killed who knows how many people with who knows how many diseases or whatever. So he ends up falling. I think Jamie gets him, but anyway, he ends up dying, and she is okay. She makes it down very slowly, but she has this huge gash like under her arm,
bone deep.
Yeah, bone deep that goes like from her. They say like from her elbow to her oxter. So it was really a lot worse than what they ended up with in the show, but. What I'm saying is in order to get that really dangerous gash, it was like it was dramatic.
They would have had to have another ship boarding. And like I said, when they started the voyage, I was like, I'm willing to bet that just for the adaptation purposes, nobody wants to see a ship constantly getting boarded.
Girl, I disagree. I think it's the most exciting thing.
All you have to do is once. You don't have to do it all the time. Like, because you think about it, if you're watching a show that's only 13 episodes and with all of the things they have to do every week, you don't want every week for the ship to get boarded by a new board. I mean, it's not like it's Star Trek where they're out in the middle of nowhere and the whole purpose is to explore and come into contact with alien life forms. This is like they're trying to get from point A to point B. They only have so many episodes in the season. They don't want every episode to be, oh, now some other boat is alongside of them and boarding them.
Well, as far as having something be done, yes, like that they've already done the boarding ship thing. But my response to what you said was no one wants to see. And I think, oh, hell no. That's why I loved Black Sails so much. I freaking love, just like Ron Moore, I freaking love the stuff on the ships. I think it's the most exciting part. Don't get me wrong. I mean, maybe not the illness part, but that's the most exciting part. But it would have been probably a higher budget. You would have needed more stuff. You know, it's a lot more production. And I'm okay without it. I'm saying, I think it's fine without it, but it would have been more exciting with it, but it would have taken up way too much time, and I totally get it. But we're getting way ahead. So yeah, so in the show, that's how they got us to, and I would say because they felt pressure, and I think understandably so, to keep some version of Turtle Soup, they had to find a way to have her get hurt. And they just kind of like collapsed. They made that ship thing not even happen. They're like, how can we condense this or collapse this into basically as she's meeting Jamie, she gets hurt. They have her little reunion, do the marriage. And then, you know, it was very neat and tidy. It was like very surgical, and it didn't lose the feeling. It kept the feeling of it. I don't think it was as meaningful as in the book, but that's okay. It was for the fans, because I'm sorry, it's not needed for the story. It's very sweet, but it's not needed for the story. What I'm saying is it was completely for the book fans. Back to Claire, who hasn't met Jamie yet. Claire's floating on her makeshift raft and reaches land. She is so bedraggled and so our Claire. That would have been a fun scene to do in the water. I don't know why. Maybe it's because of the whole, you know, swimmer of my childhood. I don't know. I'm attracted to water. And like I already said, I expressed that I love those boat scenes. Would you have been would you have been excited to do like a water scene like that some?
It would depend.
If you're paid a lot of money.
No. I'm not opposed to swimming.
By the way, you guys, summer can be bought.
I'm totally for sale.
I'm easy, not cheap.
Very true. It's not that the water part bothers me. It's that I would want to know how it was being controlled. Was that filmed in the, I know they had an indoor like water tank that they were doing a lot of their water scenes in. So I would imagine it would be done in that. But if we were like, I don't particularly want to be heavily dressed and in the water. No.
She wasn't that well compared to what she had on before. She wasn't that heavily dressed, but she was covered like head to ankle or neck to ankle. Yeah. Seeing Claire crawl up on the beach, to me, this is Voyager. I know we've had to go through a lot to get here, and at least the characters did. And we know Voyager is a huge book and they only get longer. But seeing our characters finally on the sand, I don't know why, but this is Voyager. The boats and the islands. That's what besides the print shop, that's what I at least look forward to. Now, I thought that Claire, with the help of Annika, was smart to help wrap up her shoes. That was cool. It made sense to take them off to get in the water, but I didn't think when they were prepping that little bundle, I didn't think about, you know, how much exactly she was taking with her, like in a bundle to the land, to the coast.
She was real lucky that she found that bundle because she didn't stay with her raft.
It's Hollywood.
Like, as soon as she saw land, she was like, oh, I'm going to swim for it, but didn't take her bundle with her. And she's lucky that it ended up on shore and didn't float away with the current.
And I also thought her wig looked great for being wet.
Her hair got real long, y'all. Real long.
Especially when it's wet, you can see how long it is.
Mm-hmm.
I love how she shook everything out. When she gets up there and she's like undone her bundle and this all full of sand, of course. And I love how she shakes everything out. And she, my first thought was, oh, well, she's going to stay a while. She's making a home here. And before I saw it the first time, or as I was watching it the first time, I thought, oh, so she's going to lay everything out. And then when the tide comes in, she's going to lose it. And then, of course, as the episode goes on, you realize they're doing the Claire journey part. They're not doing the mangroves and they're not doing the tide. Again, it's a lot more work and a lot more potentially dangerous, but you don't need it. It's just a it's a change, but it's just, it's not needed. And seeing this though, as she, you know, had the, was putting the clothes out, I had tears for most of the episode, And that's, I know it's not, it's not scientific at all, but when I am touched by something, and of course it's a book reader first because that's what I've had for dog's ears. When things touch me that, with regard to this show, touch me that much that I'm like almost in constant. It's like, it's seeing this thing that we've had in our minds and our hearts, as I said before, so many times, come to life before our eyeballs. It is too weird an experience. It's amazing, but it's just weird sometimes. And that reaction is, it's like one of the, you know, one of the ways that it just expresses itself is just through tears. Just, it's not crying, bawling, but just through tears for most of the episode. So Claire, we learned through her voiceover that she was not on Grand Turk. As I said, we don't get the mangroves or the tide coming in, but that's small potatoes. How much did we get? We got almost everything, some. I mean, they did good. I loved all the walking she did. I love the touching. Yeah, because she touched him. She kind of did. I love the touches of the ants. So showing not only how long.
Oh my God.
That was, wasn't that gross?
Worst picnic ever. That is like a nightmare. That is one of the few reasons that I don't particularly like sleeping outside.
Summer sleeps with a gag.
I do. I have to gag myself to sleep or else I'll wake myself up. No, I just, like even camping in, like, it has to be a tent and the tent has to zip all the way or I'm not going to sleep in it. Like, no.
You won't sleep under the stars?
No, I will not. Not unless it is the tent has like a skylight, but I am not laying on the ground. I mean, if I had no other option like Claire, clearly then I have no other option. But that is like creepy crawlies, man. I don't think that many would have been able to get on me before it woke me up.
So the ants, that was freaky.
Were you like scratching yourself after that? Because I was like, I swear I felt things crawling on me as soon as that happened. I was like, oh God, it begins.
No. Did you think they were real or CGI? I thought they were real.
I think they were CGI. I think they did a close up of ants, but because, you know, PETA, I'm sure that the ones that she swatted and spanked off of her legs were CGI. And I don't think as an actress I would want to have that many ants on me. I don't care if they're promised to be well-behaved and not bite me. No way.
Okay, so ants, I thought it was effective showing her, yes, we get it. She's out in the jungle or she's out, you know, and she's out of doors, out in nature where things happen. And then that was her first morning. So the first night, first morning. And then she's walking. And then I thought it was very effective. And then the second night, she finds like a kind of a, what is effectively a tree stump in a jungle. It was kind of pokey on the top, but, you know, had like a little hollow in it. She could put her bundle and then kind of lay down or lean up against it. And she wakes up in the morning, the second morning, with a python. Well, it looks like a python crawling over her or some kind of boa constrictor or something like that. And I was like, I mean, yeah, that's freaky. It's freaky. But now they've done two freaky things, both of them. On the mornings when she's waking up. So I'm like, okay, so are we going to get a third? Because two's a lot, actually. And then I was like, okay, and we didn't. I was like, okay, we just got two. And then I thought, why do something like that? Why shock us twice? To me, that loses the effect. If it were one night or whatever, if we just saw the snake, I would have been like, oh, crap.
Did you see how she woke up the third time? Tied to a bed.
Yes, Summer, but she wasn't out in nature. I'm talking about using tricks, or not gimmicks, but using things in nature to show how scared she was. That's not the same. She's with humans.
I'm just saying, if you're talking about threes, I think that waking up tied to a bed is way scarier than having a giant constrictor snake going over me, not wrapped around me, and like traveling its path through the jungle over me. I would think waking up with strange people tied to a bed would top that for sure.
It would be scary, or at least startling and freaky, because you don't know who has you or who tied you up. But that's a different category. That's freaky, period, because you can't get away. The other two, well, you might wait it out, but you can get away, or will get away.
But I think that was that the intention of that would be to show how that she's in danger.
Absolutely. How not but safe do we she is. But do we need it twice? I just thought doing the same thing, using different effects, they used two different things. Once they used ants, once they used a snake. And I thought, oh, okay. I just thought it was like, it almost became not gimmicky, but it literally made me look for a third. And I don't think her being tied up was like in a line. It is definitely freaky in its own way, and it is on the third day. And it is a third wake up. But actually, it may not have been the third day. It may have been the rest of the second day, because she fainted on the second day. We don't know if it's been overnight yet. We lost count of days and nights after she was in captivity again. I just thought the ants, I was like, oh, holy crap. Those are disgusting. That's freaky. That got me. And of course, the snake would have, you know, it's freaked me out. I was like, oh, I definitely wouldn't want to be that person. But I was just like, why do we need this twice? We got the point that she's lost. She has no one. She doesn't know where she is, really.
Well, she needed the ants because she needed to have
something for Mamacita to tend to.
Wounds for Mamacita to tend to.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know why they, quote unquote, needed the snake, but I think that they needed to impress upon, or they were trying to impress upon the viewers, how she needed to find some help sometime very soon, because this place was not hospitable.
Well, yeah. And then they showed, I guess you could say number three, even though it was dead, was a crocodile alligator thing.
Yeah, because now you know what else is on this island.
The other two did or could have hurt her, you know, like literally affected her. The dead one can't. It's freaky. But I think if you have the ants, because to me, that was the most effective thing. That was the freakiest, because they were on her. They gave her sores that could have gotten infected. That was just gross, right? The snake was like, wait, huh? Like, I was just like, why do it? Don't overdo something that you've already done so effectively. That was weird to me. But if they had done whatever, the ants, and then on the same day as the ants or not, if they had done the ants and then at some point later, maybe she is walking through and running and then she falls and she, you know, is getting up and she, right, because she can't see everything, or her feet are, right? And she falls, and as she looks up to get up, she is like face to face with the skeleton of a crocodile. I don't know. That would freak me out too. I probably would scream. So I'm just saying there's a way to, and then she could have been like, ah, and then, you know, she runs and then faints and finds Hacienda de la Fuente again, whatever. I think it was effective. And I think they kind of hit us over the head with something to make sure, oh, did you guys see this? It's dangerous out here. I'm like, I got it with the ants. That was freaky. Anyway, not to bash that, but that I was just a little taken, again, little things that take me out of the story.
Well, I can't believe you haven't mentioned the...
Are we there yet, though?
Yes, you passed it.
Okay.
The most notable death in this whole episode. Rest in peace, Claire's bum roll.
Oh, Lord. I actually did say that. I haven't said it yet, but I have it. Yeah. So I went forward and then I came back. Okay. So I loved her wee tent to rest under. And I like the island instruments Bear used here. And I love the makeup. I know it looks like she has nothing on, but obviously she has like red on. And they're not going to let that skin get, you know, really, really burned. But we see her freckles so much. I love it. Now, as the camera looks at her, and then we get a landscape shot from a drone, or maybe a helicopter, but probably a drone, that seems to be going backwards or reverse away from the greenery. The music is exotic and has hints of the love theme, but it's not finished. And this is something that happens a number of times in this episode. We'll hear something like, da da da, or da 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 da, and then it stops. We get a partial love theme almost throughout the whole show until they're reunited, which of course makes sense. It's just missing a few notes, as Jamie is missing.
It's also missing a Jamie.
I just said that as Jamie is missing. So I thought her picking up the rocks was an interesting touch.
I thought it was very convenient that she found Flint.
Girl, let's not talk about, you mean Grange? Yeah, I know. No, you can't really blame the writers because Diana's books are full of Granges, so. And to those who are listeners only of our episode discussions and haven't done our read-along for Voyager specifically, if we ever say anything like Grange or a little weird word, we'll try and explain it the first time. I think we've used it before, but we may not have explained it. Grange is a saying that we kind of now have. And ourselves and listeners have now picked it up and used it on social media. So it's a thing now. Summer was trying to say John Gray, and it came out Grand J. But it was in a moment or in a scene where there was this huge coincidence, supposedly. And so Summer was trying to say John Gray, and she said Grand J. And so that was funny. And I kind of made fun of it, or she made fun of it, and it stuck. So now if there's anything that has even nothing to do with John Gray, that we say, you know, a coincidence, right?
Yeah, just like super coincidental. We are like, nah, okay.
Okay, yeah, exactly. So Summer's like, yeah, the Flint. Yeah, that's a Grange. Like, oh, isn't that convenient? So it's not just a coincidence. It's also coincidence on the order of. The odds against this are so ridiculously large that the fact that this happened or the fact that this person did this with this thing is kind of ridiculous. That's a Grange. And that's what Summer's saying about about the Flint. Like, okay, she was so lucky there. That was ridiculous.
Like she stubs her toe and like, oh, look, it's Flint.
Two pieces.
Right.
Because one piece would be hard to work with.
Right. She didn't have any steel, so...
Yeah. Well, darn her. So I thought her picking up the rocks were an interesting touch, as Summer said. Now, she is thinking of where she's going, how to get to a road and find a town and get passage to Jamaica. And all this is in her voiceover. Now, that night, this is night one, she makes a small fire and sacrifices her bum roll, as Summer said.
Moment of silence for the bum roll.
I wonder if Claire learned all about this... fire stuff from her uncle.
I'm sure she did. That's the only thing that makes sense. Or it could have been army training.
That's true. I was thinking military too. So the next morning, this is our first morning. Yuck. That was gross. Those ants were really done really well. One last thing about the snake versus the ants. Weren't the ants, I mean, the snake would be freaky, but having ants like that, wouldn't you like, oh, it would make me almost... I mean, of course, frantic to get them off of me, but that would make me almost more sick to my stomach than a snake. A snake would just kind of freak me out and then it would go away, right? Hopefully. But the ants just, like you said, you were watching it and you started to scratch yourself.
Yeah. No, it's totally psychosomatic.
Yuck, yuck, yuck. Okay. So she wraps up her legs ostensibly to protect them from getting bitten anymore. I mean, I'm guessing.
My thought behind that was because I was watching it with my boyfriend and he was like, you don't need to wrap ant bites. And then I thought, you know, when I have a mosquito bite, you ever like push on it and it makes it stop itching? Mm-hmm. My thought was like maybe she put like a pressure bandage on it because maybe if it was being compressed, she couldn't feel the itching and she wouldn't scratch it. That's what I thought. But I could be totally wrong.
Well, maybe we'll one of our listeners, because we have several, because we've heard from you guys, several of our listeners that we've heard from at least are doctors. And we would love to hear from you guys if, whether it's modern or I should say contemporary knowledge or practice, or something that maybe is more in line with the knowledge of practice that Claire had either from the 40s or up to the 60s from medical school. Do you guys know why someone would do that? Fantastic to find out.
I mean, it might just be that she'd already scratched herself and had no way of keeping it clean. And
yeah, okay, that too. Yeah, keeping it clean, yeah. So I love Claire going through the jungle and her unfortunate and unsuccessful search for water, mostly unsuccessful. Night number two, this is where she found that little tree stump, actually not so little tree stump, to use as a pillow or whatever, and she leans up against it and goes to sleep. Now, morning number two, she wakes up with a python or a...
It was some sort of a constricting snake.
Crawling across her?
She was in the way. She was probably laying in the middle of Snake Highway in the middle of the jungle. That's where all the snakes use that thoroughfare. And she was just in the way. So he just, you know, didn't want to wake her. He just went over her. We don't need to give snakes a bad name.
Oh, I'm not. That doesn't mean I want to be up close and personal to them. I don't want them to be hurt, but I don't want them near my body or my face. So she continues to stumble through the jungle and we get a peek at her janky legs. And she walks on by the skeleton of a crocodile or alligator, whichever it was. And then she wanders into the courtyard of Hacienda de la Fuente. And we hear the voice of Father Fogden. And Claire passes out. And then the camera goes on to another scene just after Father Fogden's dog sniffs her. Ludo. So late, and this is where the whole thing about the days and the times is this is when we lose it because it's still daylight. It's daylight when she passes out. It's still daylight when she wakes up and is tied to the bed. So later the same day, I believe, but I could be wrong. Some point in a daylight hour, she wakes up tied to a bed with a glass of water just out of reach. Now that was just mean.
Well, it does not. Everything's out of reach when your hands are tied.
And then we see Mamacita. Now I know that.
Oh my God. I was so pleased
that they kept her.
I was so pleased with Mamacita. They couldn't not keep her.
I know.
She's so like integral. If they're going to have Father Fogden, they have to have her.
Yeah.
And I would like to say that I'm super glad that we all now finally know how to say Ermenhilda.
Oh, yeah. It's
Ermenhilda. Ermenhilda.
It's much prettier than I was probably ever pronouncing it if I had it even halfway correct. I don't even know.
Ermengild.
I have to go back and listen. I forget how it. Something like that. It is very pretty.
Ermenhilda, well, right?
Not before, but now it's Ermenhilda. Yeah. We meet Mamacita. And when Claire says she's thirsty and Mamacita, gets the water, she like does it. She's not a very helpful nurse. She basically pours it down her throat. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's not probably not the best way. She's basically trying to drown her. She never looks nicely at Claire. We learn later why. Mamacita says that the ties are necessary for keeping her from picking at her legs and scratching them. And then she takes her clothes away to wash them.
After eyeing the zipper suspiciously. She's like, what the f*** is that?
Yeah, that was odd. That was odd. So again, maybe later the same day, maybe not. Father Fogden. We meet him. Now, he kind of just his look, his face reminds me of I can't remember the guy's name, of Reverend Wakefield. He looks like the actor a little bit.
No, I didn't think he looked like him.
And I don't think it was on purpose necessarily. I'm just saying, not in his character, but in his facial features.
I would say they had similar mannerisms more than I would thought they. I don't think they looked like each other. But that kind of like that bumbling.
Yeah.
But, you know, Reverend Wakefield was considerably less crazy.
Now, Mamacita has put on some sort of poultice to Claire's legs.
Just rubbed him in pesto. It was fine.
That's perfect. It actually looked like pesto. Claire tells Father Fogden that she's a doctor. And then because she's like, no, I don't want to have to. I'm not going to explain things. This is too much. I'm not feeling well. She just goes forward with, I'm from the American colonies. It's more common there. She's like, let's just do this. Now, she finds out from him that she's on the island of Saint-Domingue. Now, can we, I don't know. I'm just going to say, thank goodness he pronounces the French correctly. This is so stupid, I know, but Jamie, who in the books, I guess the show Jamie doesn't speak French very well. I guess we just have to, even though he spoke it oddly, not oddly, oddly enough, he spoke it in season two, but season three, I won't go back, but season three was odd. But here is this English, he's English, right? This English Catholic priest who, yeah, his French's pronunciation is pretty darn good. And he even says, Cap Haïtien, just like in French. I love you, Father Fogden. Thank you so much. You're my favorite person. So he tells Claire, oh, Coco says it's too far and too dangerous to leave the next day because Claire's like, oh, well, now that I know where we are, how long does it take to get there? Oh, well, okay, we can go tomorrow. And he's like, no, Coco. And she's like, what's Coco? And in his same speech, we are introduced to the Maroons, who are escaped slaves
who have left their masters and fled to the hills, and they have communities together. So pirates are also a danger if you're undertaking this kind of, you know, trip by foot. So Father Fogden has an animated conversation with a coconut,
who rudely stares at her.
That's true. And we hear for the first time about his Hermena Hilda when he asks Mamacita if Madame Physician might wear Hermena Hilda's dress. She says, nope, too small for that cow.
God, I love that. I love that they kept it. Oh. I love it because she was, Mamacita was in the book was such a bitch. I'm so glad they kept it because it was such a strange choice for Diana. That because it was so strange that I'm so glad they kept it because it's just hysterical.
So she tells Claire that she stinks and needs to wash. And then Claire is taken outside and she gets to bathe. And she actually makes me want to take a hot bath in the middle of the jungle.
I wondered how hot that water was, though. It wasn't steaming.
I didn't see steam either. So I love how we're able to see her gray. It's not, obviously, we're not getting that huge ribbon of it anymore, this huge band of it, but that was gone already. I love that it pokes through. Even when it's wet, it's, you know, you just see little strips of it. Mama Sita sure does not like Claire. It's in her every move, even dishing up her food. Now at the dinner or meal, we get Father Fogden's story. 15 years ago, he traveled to Cuba, or as he says, Cuba, as a missionary. And he did that, or he was that, until he met Hermena Hilda. And dang it, if I didn't tear up at Mamacita.
Oh my God, her face.
I know. And she's now reliving her daughter's final days with this retelling. They basically, Hermena Hilda and Father Fogden, they wanted each other. And she was married. But they ran away together. And right as they ran, the English invaded Cuba the day they fled. Now, shortly after they arrived, not right away, on Saint Domingue, Hermena Hilda died. Now, what we are not told in the show, although I guess you have to surmise it because it's pretty obvious, I guess, is that it wasn't just him and Hermena Hilda. It was him, Hermena Hilda, the mom, and the dog, correct? Now, I don't know where the goats came from, but they had like a little caravan going on. It wasn't just the two of them in a boat that they took off together. They had enough stuff to at least start with. I mean, they had all her clothing. Look, her clothing stash was there. Then our priest offers Claire some smoke. Claire wants to leave the next morning, but Father Fogden won't have it.
You know, it's funny though, it reminded me of every like person who smokes weed that I've ever come in contact with. They always are like, you want to smoke with me?
Huh.
They never want to smoke by themselves. They're like, I don't want to do this. They're always, it's always like super polite. They're like, oh, I'm going to smoke some of my weed. I would like you to smoke it with me. They always offer it. I've never met a rude pot smoker.
A rude pot smoker.
I'm sure they exist. It just struck me as funny that it was the exact same. Like, it reminded me of that.
Father Fogden says that he and Coco will accompany Claire the following week because she needs to rest. And Claire says, I need to get to Jamaica. And he's like, okay, because she's starting to get a little obstinate now and he's getting, you know, giving it right back to her. And he says, okay, maybe 2 weeks because you don't seem well when she starts to protest more. And then she drops a C, not the JC, but the C. And he's like, okay, blasphemer, that's not welcome in this house. Mamacita wants her to go. She's like, we've done our Catholic duty. And she says, quote, that whore must go. Wowza. She's okay. So we've got a cow and a whore. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's keep track of this now. She's afraid that another woman would take the place of Hermena Hilda in the priest's heart and affections. She wants her gone. The Jezebel. So we've got a cow, whore, Jezebel. Okay. Claire leaves the table and wanders around the abode. I wonder if she understands Spanish. I don't think so, but she definitely understands tone enough to know that Mamacita is pissed off at her presence. So I love it when Mamacita stomps off because we get the subtitles and this is what she says. Because they're arguing
And she says at the very end of it, she goes, "Is that clear?" And he goes, "Yes." And she goes, "Shut up."
It's like,
I'm like, you just asked him a question. And now he's saying, and then she leaves. Oh my God. It's so perfect. I like that actress.
Like, it's like the people who are like, "Don't look at me in that tone of voice." Or, "You shut your mouth when you talk to me."
Exactly. It makes no sense. They just want to say it because they don't want to hear from me. Oh, it's too much. So Claire is looking around, and Ermina Hilda's dress is really pretty.
I bet that would have fit her. Mama Sita was just being a meanie.
Now, Father Fogden comes and finds her, and he explains that Mama Sita is still mourning the loss of her only child. And of course, this makes Claire, you know, even softer, or not even softer, a little softer toward her. Now, a visitor, he says, especially a woman, Mama Sita fears that he will forget her daughter, which he says he could never do. Quote, "When you love someone as much as I loved Ermina Hilda, it never leaves you," unquote. So I think Claire gets it, and he sees this. He understands. Right as she says, "My husband," the love theme starts. Now, it's got more notes than it did earlier, but it's still not complete. She suggests that they go in the morning. And Father Fogden, like, has a change of heart. He's like, "Yay, that's an amazing idea. I'll ask Coco in the morning." And Claire's all, "Oh, bugger." On a coconut?
She's like, "My future depends upon a coconut?"
A coconut? Exactly. So the next morning, Claire is in bed. She's about to get up. And when the camera opens on this scene of her room where she's at, we hear a kid, oh, baby goat, we hear a kid crying, or bleating at least. And that's pretty consistent at this moment over the next few minutes. Claire gets out of bed. Her legs are much better. And she finds her clothes clean and dry and mended. She gets dressed and goes to find Coco and plans it so that Father Vogden hears
their
conversation, or her conversation. And he comes in.
Could you imagine, though, if he walks in and he's like, "That's not what Coco said."
You know what I thought? I expected him to say something like, "You know that's a coconut, right?" And just like, and then makes her feel the fool. So he comes in and he sees them talking, or excuse me, he sees Claire talking. And then we hear Mama Sita start to yell from outside, and she's saying, "Father, father." And then we hear an "Oddio." That was very Italian and not Spanish, but sorry. I studied Italian, not Spanish. So my Spanish, when I try to fake Spanish, it sounds Italian, which whatever. Her beloved Arabella, she says, has been killed. And specifically, she says she saw a Chinese sailor kill her. She witnessed the whole thing. Yeah, I don't think Claire speaks Spanish, or she would have clued in on the whole thing, the whole Chinese sailor.
Right away, yeah.
Like she did when Father Fogden said it. Now, I don't know. Okay, this, and it could have been fake. I don't even know. Doesn't matter. But, number one, if it's your job, and plus if it's fake, you do it. But I would have had, I don't know about the ants. Maybe not the snake. Maybe not. Who knows? Would you?
You don't want to carry the goat head?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not my favorite thing, but I could have done that. I was more concerned with the beetles in the jar. How do you keep a jar full of beetles alive?
Yeah, exactly.
And how do you put them back in the jar?
I don't know. I'm wondering if they're like leeches. Like once they get, they're full of blood, they like fall off, and then they're just like, you know what I mean? They're like fat and happy and they just don't go anywhere.
I don't know. Is it like Thanksgiving for them?
I mean, you can easily pick them up. That's my guess. But so Father Fogden goes to get some beetles so they can eat the flesh off of the bones. Yuck. Now this makes me wonder, and we'll find out soon, and I'm not going to say anything more than this term, but it makes me wonder if we'll get the Loa Loa.
I don't know.
I'm thinking probably not, because it's a lot of work and it's like next to an eyeball, so that's probably dangerous, so probably not going to get it. So he says that the beetles are from a sacred cave called Abandoe. Different pronunciation than we've heard, but it seems that's happening a lot. And we get a flashback to the Campbells and Margaret Campbell saying to Claire, "Abandoe will devour you. Abandoe, abandoe." So this place, he says, is a place of great power. He said folks disappear there.
People disappear there all the time.
And I went, that's very similar to our opening season 1, episode 1. Then Father Fogden gets a little pissy as he talks about what happened to Arabella. He says it was, quote, a feast for a Chinaman. And this is when Claire snaps her head about and asks him where they are. She knows they are close. Now, Mamacita saw lots of sailors, she says, and some broken sails. Claire is begging Father Fogden how to get to the ship, but he's butt hurt about Arabella. And he refuses to listen.
He's pretty focused.
He is.
However, Mamacita now sees her way to get rid of this lady. And she's like, I'll show you.
Exactly. And Mamacita, I mean, I have no ill feeling toward her at all. I understand why she wants Claire gone. She's kind of an itchy bay about it, but she's hysterical. And she lost a daughter. So there's a lot that can be obviously overlooked or forgiven, whatever. But yeah, so she sees her chance to be rid of the whore cow, Jezebel.
I know. She's like,
and
keep
she
going.
She tells Claire straight. You go right and you go straight. That way. Bye.
Don't stop. Don't turn around.
Exactly. She almost like holds her hand.
Exactly.
Like,
keep going.
She's like, yes, that's the way. You're correct. Bye. The music is getting closer to the love theme here. We see Jamie on a beach, and there's also a partial love theme, not complete. Then we see Fergus. And I wrote, wow, he looks nice. So their ship's hull remains intact. If I'm not mistaken, in the book, it was the ship that was on the water. Because remember, okay, in the book, there was a lot more damage to the ship. It wasn't just sails.
In the book, they were in a protected cove repairing the ship.
And the way they fixed up the ship, like they were limited in what they could do, but the way they fixed up the ship was that, and I forget how it happened, but Jamie was split away from...
He was with the French.
Yeah, but not for giggles. I mean, what I'm saying is I don't remember how he got with them, but he was away from the ship, and he met up with a French, not a ship, but some French soldiers, I guess. And he told them that that it was his ship, but he called himself something different. He called himself Captain Alessandro, and then his ship was having trouble, blah, blah, blah. I think this was what happened. And then he led these men over to there, and
he got them all to help. And the whole idea was that he's like, we're going to help them fix the ship, and then we're going to steal it. Then we're going to take them all under arrest and put them all on the brig. And they did they did the exact opposite.
Yeah. So he got the French soldiers or sailors, whoever they were, to help repair the Artemis. And that's why they needed a lot more help, because it was actually the ship that was damaged and not just the sail. So anyway, because they, again, by doing what they did in the show, it cut down on a lot of that. So that kind of...
Well, it wasn't just the sail in this. It was the mast and the sail, making a new mast.
Yes, but they didn't need 20 or 30 other people. They didn't need Jamie. You know, there was so much that they cut out, is what I'm saying. They were able to save a lot of time by changing how the Artemis was, maybe not how, but by changing what the damage to the Artemis was.
Okay.
And so when she comes up on the shore, well, we see them on the shore. So their time in at least what we see them working on goes by pretty quickly. Or I know it wasn't like minutes. It was probably hours, of course. But it was, you know, you see a scene of them doing something on the beach. And then you see Claire running and running and running. And then you see another scene of them. And they're much further along in what they're doing. And then you see Claire running and running and running.
Like, this must have been a really far away.
That's what I mean.
For her to run. And then, did you see how quickly they got back from the boat to the beach?
No, I didn't count or anything.
It was like super fast. Like I was thinking that for as far off as that boat was, and I know it would have been long and would have taken a lot of time to show them getting in the boat.
It was just really
rowing the boat to shore. It was just like, it made it seem like they were just right there, even though he needed that spyglass to make her look like more than a speck of twinkly light. And can I say, Claire the Klepto?
Oh yeah, that was funny.
Thieving that mirror.
My first time watching it, I noticed that she pocketed it. But then my second time when I was taking notes, I totally missed it. I saw it and I remembered it when she did the whole mirror thing. But okay, it moves really quickly is what I'm trying to say. But before they actually get to the ship, when we're still seeing Claire running the back and forth and then them on the beach. There, as I said, the ship's hull remains intact, or at least the ship itself, the body of the ship is fine. It's out in the water still. It's still floating.
And they mention it.
Yes.
That it was intact.
And they say only the sail or the mast, the part definitely important parts, were, I can't wanted to say injured, were damaged. But there were men lost, just as in the book. And Captain Rains, just as in the book, was lost. And we also lost the cook, Murphy. And that's not a big loss because...
Well, because we never really met him.
Exactly. He's never developed. He is not developed in the show like he was in the books. And
to my knowledge, he was only ever mentioned by name. And then I think they showed him handing Fergus that potpourri. That's it. That's the only time we ever saw Murphy. And not even by name. Also,
maybe I heard the name, but maybe they didn't have his name while his face was on the screen. So we do lose Captain Rains, and they get rid of Murphy, which is not, you know, it's sad, but not a huge loss because that we never really got to know him much. So Murphy does not make turtle soup, and we'll find out later who does. So Will Buy.
I thought you were mispronouncing Willoughby.
Oh no, but I meant to say okay.
You're so all Will Buy.
I'll buy book Jamie being different from show Jamie, okay? But dude, if you try to make Jamie start talking about God or the Lord or saying that you'll be forgiven if you have a pure heart, blah, blah, blah. This is you're getting close to like, if you're not going to make him that religious or that whatever, okay, he's show Jamie. But this is, to me, it's cherry picking. I don't think it's fair to, I mean, they're going to do what they're going to do. So I guess that's fair. But do you know what I'm talking about? Like they didn't make Jamie. He's not a staunch, conservative, devout Catholic in the book. He is devout, and he's quite conservative, but he's not the most, you know, conservative of his time, right? He's rather enlightened for his time. And that's why I think he is so open to Claire. But we don't get that. That's not show Jamie. And that's okay. It's the choice they've made. But I don't know. I just had things that aren't in alignment. Okay, if things are not in alignment with the book, it sticks out. Not saying it's bad or good. It sticks out because we're like, oh, okay, that's not what we're used to. But okay, it's different. But then if you've made that decision to make a show Jamie, right, as opposed to book Jamie, because they are different, then then you go and not do a U-turn. It wasn't a U-turn, but make an odd, to me, it was odd. It just stuck out. You get Jamie, who doesn't talk a lot about God, who doesn't talk about, you know what I mean? And I know Fergus, it was Fergus's thing, not Jamie's thing, but Jamie talks to him about God. And if you feel okay in your heart, you'll be forgiven and all of this. I mean, it was a very sweet little, it was a sweet dialogue. It was nothing wrong with it. But I just, now whenever Jamie mentions God or besides saying like, oh my gosh, or JC or whatever, like besides an expletive or exclamation, if there's ever any like actual discussion about something, it just seems out of place to me because that's not show Jamie.
Even the stinking papist scene?
That, I don't think they would have done it if, number one, that's kind of iconic too. I don't think they would have done it if it didn't involve a very important scene with his son. Because I'm not going to lie, him praying to some saint or having a, you know, asking for, that was a very devout thing to do. There's nothing wrong with it. But we've never seen Jamie like that ever outside the books. So that I love it. I accept it. Because it's in line with book Jamie. Not that he's better. He's, you know, again, what we're used to. When you, maybe cherry picking is the wrong word, but when you bring in something that is completely book Jamie because you've made a decision not to align show Jamie with that, it just stands out to me. Again, if it's different than the choices, if it's not in line with the choices that you've chosen to make, that's when it stands out. I think that's the biggest thing. When it's not in line, maybe not being in line with the character of book Jamie, because maybe that's not fair to say, but when it's not in line with the character as you've changed him, or as you've selected for him to be, that's odd. It stuck out to me. But yeah, it is what it is. So I don't know that one is Haze and I think I forget the other one, but I guess everybody's calling them Whiskey and Seaweed. So Whiskey and Seaweed are getting a little bit funnier. There's still no Rupert and Angus, but they're getting a little funnier. And Jamie goes to get Marsali's help with to stitch the sail, right?
Yeah, but clearly Willoughby's a much better stitcher.
Oh, no kidding.
Why didn't they exactly. Just get him?
When he said, I know someone with the fine skill or fine stitch, I'm like, oh, it's Willoughby, duh. But then he goes after Marsali. I was like, oh, okay. And then Claire, we go back to Claire. Claire is running hard. And then we go back to the beach and they're setting things up. So they're like, they move super quick. Either they're literally almost done or she had 3 miles to run. I don't even know. That was crazy. So they're getting ready to take the stuff off to the ship. And Claire is still running. And as she runs, she snags her arm on a nasty looking sharp branch. When I saw that my first watch, I was like, oh, okay. Well, she scratched herself, whatever. Things happen when you're running fast through whatever. And then I realized like that was like brutal, kind of brutal. It was not as brutal as the cutlass wound, which is, again, not a problem, but they had to have something that was bad enough to have an effect and to have infection and all of that, and not just like a skin scratch, right? To replace the cutlass wound, since the agent of that was no longer going to be a pirate. They're like, okay, how, if we do away with this whole other thing, which saves them like gobs of time, how do we still get in turtle soup? Because to have turtle soup, besides the soup and the alcohol, you need a wound. And so this is how they got the wound. So the first time I watched it, I was like, okay, that's, you're really, honestly, Summer, the first time I saw it, I'm like, you're really klutzy, Claire. Which is unfortunate because in the book, it's not a klutz at all. It's a life and death situation. But yeah, so I thought if you're going to change it and you're going to still slip it in somewhere, I thought it was a really, sleek is the wrong word, slick, a really slick way of just making it happen without taking any more time. That was,
please never say slip it in somewhere ever again.
Okay. Unless I really want to.
If you're going to slip it in somewhere.
That's like your talk, not mine.
I'm just saying, it sounded naughty.
We've lost Murphy with Rains. So there's no pirate confrontation. Now, the latter makes sense since it would have taken a lot more time. We've already talked about that. And it still gives us a reason for Claire to use her penicillin. As Claire makes it to the beach, the party has already made it to the Artemis. And that's what I thought too. I was like, dang, they're fast. Dang, that must have been a long walk run.
Either that or the whole beach scene happened concurrently with earlier, like that it was kind of a reverse of time. Like it wasn't concurrent with her running from the priest's house.
What I want to know is did the goats wander? Because if Willoughby came at all close to the house, then that makes sense that Mamacita saw him. But if the goats wandered and Mamacita was like going out trying to find them, because she didn't just find a dead goat head. She saw a Chinese man take the goat, kill him, her, and put her on a spit and eat her. She saw all of this. So she hung out for a little while. She didn't just like see him kill her and run away. She wanted the head. So I guess she waited until they finished and then walked away and she stole the head. I don't know what happened.
You know what, though? What I thought was weird about that? I thought it was weird that they went to the trouble of like skinning the head.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was like, well, if they're going to go through that, like it was well cleaned. Like it looked like they were planning to cook it. So she must.
The head?
Yeah. Like you, like in some sort of a stew or something, like boil it or something. But it looked like it had been cleaned to cook or eat. So for her to have it, they wouldn't have left that behind. There's lots of meat still on that thing.
Let's just say for sake of argument that from the moment Claire starts to run and then we get the back and forth to what they do on the beach and as Claire's running, let's say it's real time. Now, obviously, we're not seeing all of her run and we're not seeing all of their work on the beach because there's like big pieces that we're missing, right? We don't see them row out to the Artemis. But if all of that happens concurrently, then that's like, I mean, that had to be an hour.
That was a long run.
Well, it's not just the long run. I mean, for them to finish up their stuff, load up and then take it out there and not just get it out there. They were almost done setting it up.
Well, they said it. But they weren't going to take off till evening.
Well, that's true.
So they were going to be there for a little bit. However, they made it back to the boat real fast. Yeah.
But they were ready to go. So you're probably talking more than an hour. But let's be generous and say they were super quick. And Claire gets hit or not, whatever. Okay, that I can buy maybe. If it was that far away to get to the beach, how did Mama Sita see all of that and get back so soon? Or that actually, I want, actually, okay, now that I'm thinking about it out loud, it makes more sense. Now, I don't know how she got down there or why she was following a sheep, or maybe she was trying to find it. I don't know. Because it's not, she didn't just find Arabella's head, right? She saw the person who took her and watched that person kill her, put her on a spit and eat her. So because she saw so much and she was, I'm guessing, hiding out, she's like, I'm not going to get in trouble with these guys because she doesn't know who it is. Because she saw so much and then I'm guessing waited and then took the head, I'm thinking Claire has a long time to run down there too. But we see nothing of the goat eating, right? So if Claire runs and gets there in, let's just say, an hour, it must have taken Mama Sita more than an hour to get back.
Yeah, that doesn't, I know, but that doesn't track for me.
I'm just saying. So if Mama Sita, however long it took her to get down, I don't know. But if Mama Sita hangs out, watches this happen, they eat it, and then steals the head somehow and walks back quickly, but takes more than an hour, then what does make sense is as soon as Claire takes off and we see them and they're working, they're not eating. We see no remnants, at least I didn't see in the background, any remnants of a goat or a spit or food or whatever. Then what makes sense to me is because it's closer than another island, but it's still pretty far away for them to go on foot quickly. That's the only thing that makes sense to me, is that all this stuff is done before Mama Sita comes back.
Considering how long it took Claire to get down to the beach, and considering the fact that Mama Sita, while visibly distressed, was not winded in any way, shape, or form, she was not hurrying to get back to the farm.
So that makes it even longer. So by the time they finish eating, or let's say started, she didn't need to wait till they finished eating, but as long as she could get the head somehow, she could have walked leisurely back. Because there's no reason to, what is she going to get if she comes back quickly? Nothing. She's out of breath.
I mean, they weren't going to go down and try to stop anything.
Well, they're not going to go after them. Arabella's already dead. They can't say, you're not going to help or hurt anyone except yourself, maybe. Hurt yourself. You might, fall down and hit your head, whatever. So I agree with you. She probably walked leisurely back, however long it took.
I mean, probably not leisurely, but I don't know how long I'd want to be carrying a dead goat head.
She had no problem with that.
Well, yeah.
But let's say it was an hour. Let's say she was a fast walker, but not out of breath. My point is, by the time that hour plus passes, they've already finished eating an hour ahead. Or, you know what I'm saying? They're done. By the time she's left, arrived back at the hacienda, they're already back on fixing the mast and the sails, right? So then when Claire takes off, there's like not only no sign of a goat, like that's not anywhere around. So yeah, the timeline's a little wonky. Not bad, just the way Mama Sita makes it sound, and I'm not saying that this is how it was, but the way it was for me as a viewer was I thought Mama Sita was just down there and just saw this, and this is the head of the thing that was just killed. And then when you realize how long it takes Claire to get there because of all the stuff they finished, that's probably more than an hour to an hour and a half after they finished the goat. So it was just a weird time thing. But yeah, so it was not a quick trip.
No.
Not a quick walk. As she makes it to the beach, the party has already made it to the Artemis and they are setting the sails. She screams Jamie's name, of course, to no avail. Here, the first few notes of the Druid theme occur, but it doesn't finish. She uses the mirror. She remembers the mirror she stole from the hacienda to signal the ship.
Klepto Claire. Can we hashtag that? Klepto Claire.
That's funny. Thankfully, she gets Jamie's attention and he borrows someone's spyglass and is able to confirm it's her. Now, when he sees her and drops I think he says it after he drops the spyglass, but he says Sasnak under his breath at first upon realizing who it was. I got a tear. Mm-hmm. Now she thinks she's lost them. And then this theme that comes together is all swarmy. And that's when Summer was saying, like, It was like he saw her through the spyglass, said Sassenach, and then like 3 seconds later, he's coming off the rowboat. I mean, that was...
Now, he's not... You don't even see him coming off the rowboat. You see him just... The rowboat hits the shore, and then there's a scene of him running down the beach. I was like, I couldn't even tell he was on the rowboat. He was just on the beach.
So... Them running toward each other. I love the slow treatment of the theme. And I love it when Bear does this. It's, and we've heard it. I don't think we've heard it ever like we have here in this season. It's played here. It's the same thing, I believe, when they are making love the first time in the print shop. And that is the love theme is da 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 da, right? That's how it starts. Well, what Bear did again, and if you remember me talking about the huge scoop, he did it again. Not as big as that time, but pretty big. Da 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 da. But not as long. I made it more dramatic than it was. But the first time in the print shop, hell, it was hella long, probably longer than that. But this one was not as long, but it was dramatic. But it's so like, oh, it's so... Love it, love it, love it. So one of the most beautiful themes. So I love the scoops. So then we get Seaweed and Whiskey saying, and this is what I meant by them getting funnier. One of them says, quote, McDo's wife turns up in the most unlikely of places, does she know? Unquote.
She does. Because she's a grande.
Because she's a grande. No, because she's a TT.
She's not a TT.
She is a TT, Summer.
No, but the entire random,
yes, that's true,
chance of her being on that island where they are moored right off the shore from to do the repairs is a grande.
Yes. So Mr. Willoughby, as Summer said, is the one who stitches up her wound. And she's told Jamie, she's just finishing the conversation about like where she's been, what happened. And she's told Jamie about Father Fogden and her escape from the porpoise. And of course, about Captain Leonard and his plans for Jamie. Jamie tells her he's given his blessing to Fergus and Marsali, saying, quote, he loves her as I do you. Dang. As he's there sitting next to her, I wrote, I swear to goodness, I get this thought every once in a while, but it was really evident at this point, at this scene. It's like, dang, I think Jamie has more cleavage than I do.
I didn't notice that at all.
Well, Lord, you're not looking at the right place then.
I guess I'm more of an ass woman than a cleavage.
I guess.
I'm not a boob girl.
Oh, Summer. Neither am I. It was just, I was like, dang, you got like that cut thing there. Goodness. And there's going to be a wedding. So, of course, Father Fogden to the rescue. Now, take away Mamacita, take away Arabella, take away all the Hermenegilda stuff. Just like in the book, when Claire needed a way for Jamie to get across the ocean, and that was done by having Willoughby introduce the acupuncture needles. That was his whole reason for being, she says. The whole reason for Father Fogden was to marry Marsali and Fergus. I almost forgot his name. So do you think I'm wrong, or do you think that's the same? That's correct.
I don't think that's the only reason. I think that it's a convenient thing. That, you know, they needed to have somebody be that person, but here's the thing. To create a character that kind of specific and with those, that many quirks only to officiate a wedding kind of seems like, I mean, that's...
Well, Mr. Willoughby was much more, I mean, people didn't like the character or have strong opinions of the character, but he's fleshed out differently, but he has an even bigger role in the books than he does in the show. And he was only first introduced or created because of the acupuncture. So he was fleshed out more. Whether you like the way he was fleshed out or not, that's why he was at least popped up. Now, I have not read. I am not saying that this is 100% the only reason Father Fogden exists or popped up. But my guess is if he was, it was because it was so that they could marry Marsali and Fergus.
I would argue that the fact that he was a priest was Grange-esque. However, I think that they had to have people on that island to care for Claire. So I think that the fact that they made him, that Diana made him a priest was...
Which is Grange.
Yeah.
Okay. So I agree. Whether it's him or someone else, which, you know, if you have more people, then it's extremely even more Grange, which is borderline stupid. But I agree. You have to have, whether it's a priest or whomever, you need, there needed to be people on that island. Otherwise, she would have died. So let's not kill our heroine. Let's keep her alive somehow. So let's have her come to this place, which is, you know, how do I know that these people got here? Well, you know, and she came up with his backstory. And yeah, it makes it a Grange that he is a priest. But yeah, you could also say, priest aside, it's a Grange that he's even there, right? With anybody, Mamacita, whomever. So it's a Grange that he's there. It's like a double Grange that he's a priest. But yeah, so it definitely is a convenience for that he can marry the two. So Mr. Willoughby takes a chicken to Father Fogden and apologizes. I thought it was very kind of him. Now, Father Fogden accepts his chicken and his apology, and he offers him a smoke.
And of course, Mr. Willoughby says, sure.
Yeah.
He's like, pass it on the left-hand side, buddy.
Okay, now I forget exactly when we got this conversation. It could have been I think it was before the wedding. But whenever...
Didn't it happen right before the pirates?
That's when they were talking. Yeah, I think you're right. Okay, so here in the show, episode 311, Marsali is getting ready for her wedding. Now, she ends up wearing one of Amanda Hilda's dresses, right?
I don't recall.
Okay. Thought it was one of the white, light ones we saw hanging up in the room.
What she was wearing? I thought it came from the chest. I assumed it came from the chest.
Oh, maybe. So she's still a bit smart with Claire, but she's beginning to open up a little bit. We finally get the chat that we missed on the Artemis.
I just think that we're inching closer to her calling her mother Claire.
I hope so. I hope it happens before the end of the series, but we'll see.
Series or season?
Oh, season.
It'll happen before the end of the series. Faux show.
Well, if they keep it, they may not keep that.
How could they not keep it? I love it because it shows...
Summer, you're asking me this?
Okay. Because we mentioned it, they'll cut it.
Oh, I didn't mention it. You did.
I did. Yeah. It's my fault. Sorry, guys. They're going to cut it.
No, we usually talk about that during the
read-along.
Read-along, not during the series. Let's not make it worse.
Sorry. I'll stop.
So... we're finally getting that very sweet chat between Marsali and Claire. So she says she wants to avoid conception for now. She doesn't know if she'll like being with Fergus, but she wants to enjoy her time with him. And she further explains to Claire that I remember what it was like for my mom after Jamie married her. He would hold her close and she'd shrink away. But... she says that Jamie and Claire, it appears that Claire enjoyed being with him. And she says, Marsali says, she wants to be happy with Fergus the way Claire is happy with Jamie. And then she says, quote, you being a wise woman, I thought you'd be worth asking, unquote. She's still getting her little sass in there.
She of the backhanded compliments.
Exactly. So Claire promises to explain it to her once they're back on the ship. And Marsali says, quote, maybe you're not the devil after all, unquote. So it's the beginning of the softening of Marsali. Because Marsali's character, not even in like later books, like the next book, is so much softer and so much. I mean, I think she, I don't know if she'll keep her. Well, I don't even know. It might even be, I don't know. What would you think if she kept her sass? Because it leaves her.
I don't think it leaves her. It's just not directed at Claire anymore.
On the beach for the wedding, Father Fogden is the best. So Mamacita and Father Fogden steal this episode. And I did not compare it with the book, but it is so similar. I had to seeing this acted out was pretty hysterical.
They kept the only things that mattered for me in the wedding, which is the priest asking him if he had a cock, followed by Fergus getting a full name.
Yeah.
And that's, if you want to know, the robot that made the robot tear up.
Aww.
That was the moment.
Poor robot. Father Fogden is the best. Now he starts with Mansetti. You know, the one thing that was missing, and not from like as far as dialogue or anything or acting, I'm guessing it was in the direction. I guess he just wasn't. They didn't make Father Fogden. He liked to smoke, but they didn't make him like the alcoholic druggie that he was in the book.
No, there was no sangria.
That too. And that's why it was so funny. I mean, it was funny what he said. And that's why I think he was really reminiscent of who plays, who was the guy's name who plays Reverend Wakefield? Who's the actor?
James Fleet.
So James Fleet, who plays played Reverend Wakefield in the series. I think that Father Fogden looks like a young James Fleet and acts like the young bumbling character that James Fleet played in The Vicar of Dibley. That's who he reminds me of. And not as bumbling, not by half, but because that character was, you know, like always, you know, he was kind of ignorant, right? And he was always making, he was very simple. He was a very sweet man, a very simple man. And he was making funnies, typically not on purpose. That is what Father Fogden on the beat, especially during the wedding, reminded me of. And by saying things like, oh, well, you have a cock, right? I mean, it reminded me of Vicar of Dibley. It was so funny. Summer's right. They kept, I think, the funniest and most important parts. They kept the funniest and most important parts of Mamacita, and they kept the funniest and most important parts of, or the funniest parts of the wedding. And when Father Fogden starts with they didn't say who he was, but if you remembered it, I think it was Mansetti. And he's like, so do you take so-and-so? And they're all looking around like, that's not the dude. And then
he's like, but he doesn't have a hand. That's not the guy you're marrying.
Exactly. He's like, Fergus is missing a hand. He's like, he hasn't lost his cock, has he?
Because if he has, I can't marry you.
And then Marsali's like, if you'd wed us, I could find out. Coco, let's get going. And this was funny. He asks for her name, her full name, and she gives her full name. He like ponders her name and he says, Marsali. And he was like giving different pronunciations. And I laughed because I thought, I wonder if that was the actor doing that, or I wonder if that was in the script and they did that to kind of tongue in cheek for the different pronunciation. You know what I mean?
Oh, I know what you mean. And I knew you were going to say something about it.
Okay. So you heard it.
Of course I heard it, but he didn't say he didn't say Marsali like the book. He said Marsali. He never said Marsali.
One time he said it with emphasis, maybe not as strongly as Marsali, but it was more emphasis on the sa, or I should say he de-emphasized the mar, I guess. But, and then he goes on and he forgets the words and she finishes the words for him. She says, look, let's go. I will. And then this is Fergus's chance. He says, Father Fogden says, and you have a name too? And a cock? And Fergus says,
Good God. Seriously? His fixation on Fergus's penis is like a little bit creeper worthy.
And
he shouldn't have smoked that wacky weed before he officiated.
And Fergus says, no, just Fergus. And just Fergus becomes Fergus Claudel Fraser. And this is the naming of Fergus. And this is that's what made you tear up, right?
He finished what Jamie started 20 years ago.
Exactly.
When he renamed him Fergus.
So this music that plays while Fergus gives her a ring, it has a touch of Scotland, of their homeland. Now, I wonder if it will end up being their theme because I don't recognize it.
I think we should call this theme the Does He Have a Cock theme.
Oh, Lord. Summer.
No?
No.
Okay.
And then it was so sweet before they kiss and he says, Je t'aime ma femme. And she goes, I love you too.
Yeah, I heard.
Oh, it was so perfect. It was so sweet. I love those two because she's such a hard ass, but Marsali is a hard, you know what I mean by that, right? She's not evil, just, or maybe a smart ass, but not even necessarily a brat. She can be a brat. She just is very, she's self-aware and unsure of herself. And to see them with each other is so cute. It is so cute. And then the priest blesses Jamie and Claire. And then the love theme plays partially again. Okay, so then flip-flop, we're back on the Artemis just as quick. And Claire's in their cabin eating some delicious turtle soup. And we learn it was Willoughby's recipe. And they are just infusing Willoughby with all kinds of kinds of new talents. Let's see how many people we can get rid of. Oh, well, we can save time and money or whatever on this. Let's just make Willoughby do that part. We're going to have to start a list of all the things that Willoughby does. Claire is feverish. And Jamie is helping her prepare the syringe so she can give herself a shot of the penicillin. She directs him on the filling of it and to help remove any air to give it that vertical squirt. And then she gives him a chance to stab her in the ass. And he can't do it. While the penicillin does its magic, she has to put it into her own thigh. She is ready for him. He says he doesn't want to take advantage of her. And she goes back to eating the soup. There are tons of hints of the love theme here. And I love the dialogue. She's like, bolt the door. And that is straight from the book. Bolt the door. And they begin to go at it.
Because they finally learned.
Oh, gosh. Seriously.
How to not get walked in on.
I know. Well, I don't think there's any danger of Marsali coming in this night. She's a little busy.
Not Marsali, but clearly the Willoughby would have come in.
That's true. So there's a knock on the door. And it's Willoughby asking if she enjoyed the soup. And Jamie says, I think it was Jamie, says yes. And Willoughby goes on about the turtle.
You're like, oh, does she want any more? I made a fresh batch.
And Jamie's like, no, she's good. She's good. And Willoughby gets the hint.
He gets the hint because they were very loud.
Exactly. And this is why I thought, don't get me wrong, I am happy we got turtle soup. I found it entertaining. I don't have I'm not criticizing what they did, and I appreciate the keeping of it, or at least a version of it. But the reason it was so funny, at least I thought it was so funny in the book, is what she was doing to him. She went down on her knees in front of him. And the character, I think I may have mentioned this before, but having Willoughby make the soup was, you know, fine, whatever. That's that really, honestly, that doesn't really amount to much. To me, the biggest loss is Stan.
Yeah, but
I mean, they're going to have to figure out a way to get to the certain place later on.
Though it sounds like Father Fogden knows where it is.
Yeah, and it was mentioned hecka early on. So they're already, and I'm not going to say what it was, but if you guys can probably guess now. It's been mentioned twice in different episodes. So it's not like a far off thing anymore. So I think they're connecting.
Ginger, there's only two episodes left.
What did I say?
It's not a far off thing.
No, I mean, it's not a far off. There's only two left. So it's not a.
That's right, though. There's only two, right?
Yeah.
Two, right?
So basically, there was a character who was a naturalist, I believe, or a scientist, a German scientist who was Jewish, I think, I believe. His name was Stan. And anyway, I forget how they picked him up, but they did pick him up. And
didn't he visit Father Fogden and they all had dinner together? And then he took her down to the boat, didn't he? He took her down to the beach, I thought.
In the book, it was the character of Stan who was the one who was knocking on the door, asking questions, something like, I don't even think, I mean, it may have even been about the soup, but he didn't make it. So whatever it was hysterical because Jamie, it was the same thing happened. Claire was burning up from her wound. She knew she needed to get penicillin.
She wanted some drunk nook. It's fine.
So she gets it, the penicillin. He couldn't do it. She had to do it to herself. So that's all, that's straight there. And that's awesome. But the reason it was so funny is they had the same conversation about, well, if you stand, you told me once that if you stand, you weren't drunk. And there was a lot more anyway, it was very sexy, I guess you could say. And she can't stand up.
like the, she is about to fall and he's like, okay, you're done. It's not going to, and we can't fit on the bed or the berth or whatever. They couldn't get in. So they had to do it. They were going to do it on the floor. And it was just not comfortable. And she's like, bolt the door. And, or one of them said bolt the door. So that's from the book. But anyway, she goes downtown as someone's knocking on the door and having a conversation. So Jamie's trying to go like, yeah, that's good. And that's what makes it.
How was that, Ginger? How was that? Do that again. How was it? Show me how that went.
Shut up, Zara. That's what makes it so bloody funny, because Jamie's trying to get rid of this person at the door who's trying to have a conversation with him while he's not wanting, Jamie's not wanting to have a conversation. He's wanting to be with his wife. So anyway, but again, you don't miss much. I think some of the funny, I think some of the humor was just not there. Not because it was badly written, just because it wasn't, the way it was presented wasn't there. It was sweet, and I think it was very cool to keep it for the fans. And but that is why I'm so glad that they changed the name of the episode.
All right. And that was episode 311. Join us next time when we will be discussing episode 312, entitled The Bakra.
Thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at OutlanderPod.